Did you recognize, huh? All from the 50s. It's 7:07 at WRGN. Our guests are Carol Gianforte and Jim Messier. We're going to have our third part of TV shows we watched in the 1950s. I'm a little part of the 50s, but not a lot. And these are some of the shows. Could you name? Well, you guys can name them. The first one was The Untouchables.
Yep.
Then came Alfred Hitchcock Presents Good Evening.
Yes.
And third one was Dragnet, and yep. The fourth one was Perry Mason.
That's correct.
There you go.
You got them all done.
Well, I know because I put them together. So I know what they were. Okay, so let's start about TV shows all from right. the 50s.
Yeah, well, thank you, Don. These are great memories we all share as baby boomers, the excitement of TV and those early TV shows. Carol and I already did the kiddie shows, such as the Mickey Mouse Club, and we did the shows we watched with our families, like Lawrence Welk and I Love Lucy. Oh, by the way, all these programs are on Don's podcast, so tune us in sometime if you would. But today we are including crime shows, contestant shows, and quiz shows from the 50s. Right, Carol?
Let's start with crime, Jim.
Okay.
And then let's start with Dragnet. And you guys could do this with me. Dum da dum dum.
Dum da dum dum dum.
Yes, we need your low voice. We, excellent. Mm-hmm.
With Jack Webb. Even yes. I listen to the old time radio show all the time. Uh-huh. I love the old Dragnet on the radio, which were very similar to the TV shows, except there's no picture.
Yeah.
One difference. But yes, we can still hear Jack Webb's voice too. That crisp voice. We can see The Office. Do you remember The Office? It was two desks with two black rotary dial phones. That's what the detectives needed in those days. And then for Detective Friday and his buddy, Frank Smith or Bill Gannon, the phrases that we still have, let alone the plots, but the phrases, making it so real. You guys might want to join in with me, but this is the city. Los Angeles, California. I carry a badge. Remember, my name is Friday.
Yeah. Do you remember the number of the badge?
714.
714, yeah.
He was so serious.
Yeah.
Yes. And then he does this chronological things to make it so real. It was September 13th. We were working the day watch out of homicide.
That's it, yeah.
And then he does this time thing to make it so real. For instance, 9:32 a.m. We were at the suspect's home. 10:45, we entered the suspect's garage. Right through the whole detective scene.
You know what the thing though was, and about that, and it was very. We accepted it because most people
loved it.
Well, people don't really know what it was like, but now with these live PD shows, you know what it's really like, and it's nothing like that. It is nothing like that at all when the cops come to someone's house. But we didn't know because there was no live PD. You didn't know what that was going on. Ben Alexander was the original guy. And later Harry Morgan came on when they did the 1968 remake.
Right.
But Joe Friday never changed. Always that plain, deadpan.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Never any emotion.
No, rarely smiled.
Right.
It was his show.
I mean, it was.
He produced it and everything.
Yeah.
And then the conclusion. On March 25th, the trial was held in the county of Los Angeles. The suspect is now serving his term in the state penitentiary at San Quentin. And I think San Quentin to this day, it sounds like the most horrible place in the world. Is it still operating?
Yeah. Johnny Cash gave a concert there. You remember that? The San Quentin concert.
Yeah.
And then the final part of the episode, that golden anvil coming down and hitting the sign.
Mark 7.
Yes.
Now, there's an episode on the Dick Van Dyke Show where Dick Van Dyke is dealing with a crime and whatever the police solved it. And he says, I guess this is a Mark 7. What do you mean a Mark 7? Well, he said, what do you do when the case is solved? He said, the case is solved. Mark 7 was the production company.
Yeah.
It meant nothing more than that.
Still remember.
It's a Mark 7.
Yeah, and that golden anvil. And then all this time, this was sponsored, well, most of the time by Chesterfield, which Jack Webb smoked.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, endorsed. Yeah, sure. Mm. Yeah. Another phrase from that show was, remember this one, Don? Just the facts, ma'am.
Nothing but the facts,
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And speaking of facts, Perry Mason was also a long-running crime show. That centered around the courtroom, though, instead of the police station. Perry Mason ran from 57 to 66, very long-running show. It was a legal drama starring, of course, Raymond Burr. He was always butting heads with Hamilton Berger, the DA. As far as I know, he never lost a case.
Yes, he lost one case.
Did he lose a case?
One case to Hamilton Berger.
No kidding.
Yeah, one case.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Other characters on the show were Della Street, Paul Drake, Lieutenant Tragg, and a few other replacements. But Della and Paul always worked together with Perry to clear an innocent person of murder. And if you remember, at the very end, somebody always breaks down.
The Perry Mason moment.
Yeah, and confesses to the crime. Yeah.
They still use that when I watch Dateline or 2020. They always say, and then there was the Perry Mason moment.
Yeah.
Really?
There you go.
Oh.
And did you know, Don, that Raymond Burr made over $18,000 an episode back in the mid-60s?
That's chump change.
Well,
today.
Carol and I figured out you're certainly worth that, too.
Yeah. I thought so. Yeah.
We want you to know that figure.
You're the only two that think so. So what movie did Raymond Burr make just before Perry Mason came on the air? He made a classic movie that's still watched today. TCM runs it all the time. He made the English language version of Godzilla.
That's right. Yes.
Just before Perry Mason came on.
That's
because
right.
There was the Japanese version, and they wanted to make an Americanized version, so they brought Raymond Burr in, and he made Godzilla, the original Godzilla.
That's I am with the two most informed men you could have about every minute of television.
No, just about Godzilla.
Another good show, Carol, was?
Well, we had the music for this, too, thanks to Don. Alfred Hitchcock presents.
Good evening.
See, thank you, Don. Yes.
He walks into a shadow. Remember that?
We can see the face. We can hear.
It's still on. You can watch it all. All these shows are still on, by the way.
Yeah.
So that good evening and all, we expected suspense. And this started in 55. It was on CBS at first and NBC later, Sunday nights and then Tuesday nights. And in my research, I once in a while mention my very deep research for this program. Jim, Alfred Hitchcock supposedly got 129,000 each episode.
Oh my God.
Well, he also directed some of them. He didn't direct all of them.
I guess a few he did.
Yeah, he directed at the beginning. Yes. He directed them.
Wow.
Yes. But just the names of the episodes, let alone the actual plots, sound scary. I've got to give these writers so much credit. Here's some titles. Lambs to the Slaughter. An Unlocked Window. Premonition. The Glass Eye. And then one that I guess you can find today, and I have to say I didn't try. One episode was called The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Oh, the Mickey Mouse cartoon from Fantasia.
True. Yeah.
Well,
Sorcerer's Apprentice, yeah.
Well, but this doesn't sound like Mickey Mouse, which I did not know.
But that's where it comes from, yeah.
Okay, well, this was denied by NBC or CBS because I guess it was like, you know how you saw a person in half as a fake?
Oh, yeah.
This was the real thing. They decided it was too gruesome.
Favorite Alfred Hitchcock episode, and I saw it not too long ago. They run it; it's every night on Channel 19 on the cable. I forget what network that not TV Land. I forget what the channel is. They run it every night.
MeTV.
Yeah, they run it every night. And there was one where this woman beats her husband to death with a leg of lamb.
I saw that.
And then the cops come,
yes,
and she,
yes,
she serves them the leg, yes, of lamb, and they can't find the...
Yeah, yeah. Like, she takes it out of the oven. Lambs to the slaughter. So that title was scarier than the actual production.
But it was just so clever.
And that was with Belle Geddes.
Yeah, they can't find the murder weapon, yeah, and they just ate it.
Yeah, they ate it. Lambs to the... I just saw that, too.
All right, hold on just a second. We're going to continue with Carol Gianforte, Jim Basir. We're talking about TV shows of the 50s that we all know and loved. Jim Basir, Carol Gianforte here. We're talking about some of the TV shows of the 1950s. This is part three. We talked about Dragnet, Perry Mason, Alfred Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm.
His daughter was in one of his movies. Do you remember what his daughter was in the movie?
I bet you do.
Yeah, well, I know. Yeah, that's why I'm asking the question. Do you know?
No.
Her name was Patricia Hitchcock, his daughter, and she was in Psycho at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. She's the secretary at the desk where Janet Leigh works to steal the money from the real estate company. His daughter's working at the desk.
Yeah.
She's been in a couple of TV shows, too, over the years. No major parts, but it's Patricia Hitchcock. Yeah, she was in some of the TV episodes as well.
In his movies, he always had a cameo.
Yeah, right.
Remember that?
Yeah. That was the big thing. You try to catch where he is.
Where was he?
Quick Alfred Hitchcock note, then we'll continue. In the movie Rear Window, one of the best Alfred Hitchcock movies ever, he's in the scene with the piano player. Remember the piano player was in one of the windows there?
Yeah.
You know who the piano player was? His name was Ross Bagdasarian.
Uh-huh.
Later changed his name to David Seville and the Chipmunks.
Oh, boy. Wow.
I guess he didn't make it in acting. He made a fortune with the Chipmunks, though.
Yeah.
All right, our next crime show.
Who remembers The Untouchables? They ran from 59 to 63. That was a crime drama about Elliot Ness fighting crime in Chicago during the 30s. It starred, of course, Robert Stack. And it was narrated by a guy with a very distinct voice, Walter Winchell. Now, Ness was a prohibition agent who helped bring down Big Al Capone, or otherwise known as Scarface, and his bootleg empire. Lots of action and lots of violence. Of course, Ness's men could not be bribed or bought, thus the term untouchables.
Now, the other guy he went after on a lot of the episodes, Frank Nitti.
Frank Nitti, yeah.
I think Bruce Gordon.
Bruce Gordon, he was the perfect Frank Nitti.
He played Frank Nitti on all those episodes.
That's right. And then there were the very popular contestant shows. You know, we like to watch the average Joe on TV, and that's what these shows provided. Right, Carol?
Yes. We switched from crime to contestants, so we're going to feel a lot more lighthearted right now. And what comes to mind is Groucho Marx, You Bet Your Life. Early 50s, he began. And we know Groucho, just like Alfred Hitchcock or Jack Webb, the gravelly voice, the mustache, the glasses, the bow tie, and how great he was at being witty and on the spot.
Say the secret word, win $100.
Funny you should mention that.
And the duck would come down.
Yep.
That's exactly right. Can you imagine now, from crime to contestants, how now we were waiting for the duck to come down when we watched?
Now, his show really wasn't about the contest. It was about the interviews he did with people.
Yes. Yeah.
That was the best part of the show. And the contest was secondary.
Yes. Yeah. He was just repartee or something as he got to know them and put them at ease. So here's one episode I watched lately, The Secret Word, which, of course, we knew. It was wall. Okay, how's somebody going to say wall? And would you believe one of his contestants, she operated or owned a laundromat. So he was, I think, legit. He didn't know what a laundromat was. So this was a lengthy series of back and forth about what a laundromat had. And she had to explain to him that there were all these machines on the wall.
And the duck came down.
And the duck came down.
Say the secret word, you win
$100. $100. Now, another thing about Groucho and these contestant shows, that phrase, this was filmed in front of a live audience.
You ever see some of those people in the audience?
That's just what I was going to say.
Very strange-looking people.
Mm-hmm. Well, also dressed, you know, suits,
and
ties.
Very older people. There were never young people in the audience. But they were always dressed with their pearls.
Yep.
And
It's a look back to the 50s there.
That's how they looked back then.
Right.
Yeah.
Back then. Nobody yelling anything out. You know.
No. And then DeSoto. a defunct car dealer or car make now, but DeSoto mm-hmm. brought all this to us. Mm-hmm. So we heard that over and over.
And they always had those signs in back with this, like Geritol, that was always in the background.
Oh, yes.
You always had to see the sponsor on there.
Yep, yep. Yeah. In one episode, there was an insurance salesman who claimed he could sell insurance to anyone. So Groucho picks a random number out of the phone book, and he proceeded to sell insurance. And his opening words were, and I remember this, "Madam, I'm going to put you on the payroll." So right away, she's interested, you know.
Very smart.
But I don't think he was successful, though. I think she hung up eventually.
Okay, hold it right there.
Yeah.
We're talking to Carol Gianforte and Jim Messier about TV shows from the 1950s. TV shows of the 1950s. We did the police dramas like Dragnet, Perry Mason, mm-hmm. Alfred mm-hmm. Hitchcock, The Untouchables. Then we're talking about the contestant shows like the Groucho Marx, You Bet Your Life. Mm-hmm. And what are we up to now?
Well, we're going to do People Are Funny with Art Linkletter. Now, that show ran from 54 to 1960. Contestants were asked to carry out stunts to prove that, of course, people are funny. Some stunts lasted for weeks or even months. One example was a contestant had to converse on the phone with a complete stranger, picked from the phone book, of course, at random, for several minutes without the other party hanging up. Which would be almost impossible to do. Oh, Don could probably do it.
No, not today. First of all, there's no phone book, so you couldn't do it.
That's true.
Unrecognized number.
Yeah.
Don't answer.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Another person had to get his picture in the local paper, and Art Linkletter would say, "Now, I don't want you to rob a bank or anything like that." So they were always very unusual stunts.
But this is different than Art Linkletter's house party.
Oh, that's correct.
That came in later on.
Yeah, right.
And kids say the darndest things or something.
Yeah, that was part of the house party. He interviewed all the kids at the end, yeah. Okay.
I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm. We have a few other contestant shows, and of course we had the very popular quiz shows as well, but Carol's going to tell us about another contestant show.
We'll continue on with Queen for a Day.
Would you like to be Queen for a Day? Moulin Rouge in Hollywood, one of the world's greatest show places, the National Broadcasting Company presents this portion of Queen for a Day, the Cinderella Show, starring Jack Bailey.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
There it was, Jack Bailey. How would you like to be Queen for a Day? We have all these hard luck cases up there.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jim, aren't we lucky to be under Don's direction here?
Oh, yes,
because
he's one of us.
Just during Paul Harvey, instead of concentrating 100% on Paul Harvey, Don was looking for Jack Bailey mm-hmm. and Queen for a Day.
Just giving away my secrets. I'm like the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain. And
you pull out what we need.
And just pull the curtain back.
Just right at the right moment. Yes. Well, anyway, this was another one filmed in front of a live audience, starting in 56. Yes, with Jack Bailey. Now, you know, was this good or bad? But, the viewers, that my mother and I loved it. But four contestants with sob stories. And boy, some of them, they were sad. I looked at one the other day, and do you know what this woman wanted? She had a 15-year-old son who had heart surgery and was doing okay. She wanted a record player for him. That was her wish as Queen for a Day, a record player. Well, anyway, we heard the wishes. And then the audience, that live audience, the applause meter, mm-hmm. they would applause and pick the queen that way. Mm-hmm. And then Jack Bailey's voice with getting the red velvet robe and the crown. But this was, besides what the women needed, medical bills paid, maybe a new washer, the record player. But this was the era of appliances. And everyone was going to get a new washer and dryer.
Or a hair dryer.
A hair dryer.
Yeah, true.
Everyone.
My life is falling apart, but your hair is going to look great.
Yes. That was the age. And I saw that they even gave out flatware. Now, that's a phrase I haven't heard in years. Flatware. That's silverware.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So cases, probably Gorham or Oneida, flatware for anyone. But also, I think... Today, this is kind of, they say it was a forerunner of reality shows, but we certainly sympathized. And Jim, I think you said even your family would break down even.
Oh, yeah. I never heard so many sob stories, you know, on TV. I mean, they were all legitimate, but picking the right one, you know, was really hard.
Right.
How'd they do that? Remember that?
Yeah, with the applause meter.
With the applause meter.
Yes,
that's
right. Yep. Right. Now, another one, Jim, is a lot of money involved.
Oh, yes, the $64,000 question. That ran from 55 to 58. Contestants had to answer general knowledge questions. The final question had a top prize of $64,000. And back in the mid to late 50s, that was a lot of money back then. Actually, it was the number one program in 55. And did you know, Carol, that Dr. Joyce Brothers was the first woman to win the $64,000?
Really? And, of course, the Honeymooners did a takeoff on that.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
They did a whole show.
Yes.
And he was... Yeah. Ralph Cramden was going to, he studied everything.
Yep.
He studied music. He studied everything.
Oh, no, he was going to be on it.
And Ed Norton used to start his, every time Ed Norton played the piano to start, he did,
Swanee River.
And Ralph yelled at him every time because he always started with Swanee River before he played the piano piece. And what was the first question on the 64th? Who composed Swanee River? And they said, let's play a little bit of it. And Ralph says, that's Swanee River? And he said, who composed it? He goes, Ed Norton?
Ed Norton.
But that was based on the $64,000 question.
Right.
Yeah,
that's right. Actually, it was sponsored by Revlon. It's interesting to note that their CEO often interfered with production, getting rid of contestants he didn't like. Amazing.
That was hands-on.
That's right.
When did the big scandal start with the quiz show?
We're going to get to that.
Oh, we're getting to that.
Right. Yes, that's coming.
I don't want to rush it.
Another, that's our finale.
Yep. Another program or quiz show known for the big money, of course, was The Price is Right.
Still on today.
Yes.
A different format, though.
Yes. This began, the first one, 1956, also filmed in front of a live audience. I'm stuck on that phrase. And then, talking with Jim... How many times did we watch this where we would recognize this phrase? This was a Mark Goodson, Bill Todman production.
How would we ever remember
that? Now, this was Bill Cullen, the host, with Don Pardo to begin with as the MC. And sponsors, Unilever, which was Whisk, Dove Bars, Handy Andy, and Imperial Margarine. But these four contestants had to come up each one closest to the price of the article without going over the top.
Yeah, they were all lined up on a desk,
right.
all four people, and they had to keep going until they hit freeze.
Remember that?
Yeah. I'm sorry for interrupting you.
No, we want you. You're part of our team.
We want your interruptions.
You keep us going here.
And by the way, did you notice Bill Cullen never walked on that show?
Really?
Because he had cerebral palsy.
No.
And he couldn't walk. He had a bad limp, so they just never had him walk on any show
he was ever on.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, you add so much to our research, Don.
Yeah. Like Floyd the Barber on Andy Griffith.
So
remember
much.
That?
Yeah, he had a stroke.
He
couldn't walk,
Really?
Yeah.
Well, The Price is Right got to be known for its big prizes. At times, they gave away an entire house in a new subdivision. In-ground swimming pool, mink coats. And so prizes were a big part of
Imagine giving away a mink coat today. Hey.
Don't wear it.
Yeah.
And then we have truth or consequences, Jim.
Oh, yes. That's an interesting one. Truth or consequences. You literally had 2 seconds to answer an almost impossible question.
Right. Yeah, real quick.
That's right. And then, of course, you all failed. Then you had to do crazy and zany stunts in front of everybody, right on live TV, which was really embarrassing. A couple of them that I looked at was a man was dressed in a bear suit, and he was supposed to give his wife a hug. He thought that she was dressed in a bear suit, too, but actually he was hugging a real live bear. Amazing. Another stunt was two older women had to give an elephant a bath.
Oh, my.
And they even named the town after the TV show.
That's right.
New Mexico.
Truth or Consequences, New Mexico was named after the show.
Yep, and it's still there.
Yeah.
Yes. Another good show to watch back then, of course, was I've Got a Secret. Now, that was a panel game show, ran from 52 to 67. A panel of celebrities tried to determine a contestant's secret. It was hosted for a long time by Gary Moore. Some of the famous celebrities were included Jane Meadows, Henry Morgan, Betsy Palmer, and a few others. And the secret was something that could have been either embarrassing, humorous, amazing, or unusual. Some of the guests that were on there with their secrets were Colonel Sanders. His secret was, I started my restaurant with my first Social Security check.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes. Yeah. Another one was Pete Best. Of course, one of the original Beatles. His secret was, I was one of the original Beatles.
He was the drummer before Ringo came on.
Yeah. Before Ringo came on, right.
I think we should have a Truth or Consequences, and I ask you guys the questions. Well, here,
Vivian Vance was once a guest on I've Got a Secret, and her secret was she had these kids who were part of a memory thing at school.
Yeah.
One of the kids was my sixth grade teacher's son.
So, my goodness.
Yeah, it was a live show, and that morning, I think it was on Monday morning, he said, my son's going to be on I've Got a Secret tonight, and we were all watching, and his kid didn't get one question right.
No kidding.
And the next day, he never mentioned the show. Yeah. We were watching his kid. We were all excited. There he is, Mr. Martinoni's kid. He didn't get one right, but Vivian Vance brought him on the show.
Yeah. I'll be darned. Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Another show was called 21, but that sort of changed things somewhat, right, Carol?
Well, Don, you said, what about the scandal? We've been waiting for this. Yeah, 21. My mother and I watched this. We were so mesmerized with it. There were a million viewers at one time. This show began.
Hold on one second. We're going to keep the audience at bay now.
Oh, yeah, suspense.
our live audience. Yeah. We're going to keep them at bay for just a second.
This is not filmed in front of a live audience, but.
Well, it's a live audience out there somewhere listening.
Yeah.
All right. Jim and Carol are here. We're talking about TV shows from the 50s and 60s. 21 was the show that put the quiz shows out of business for a while.
It sure did.
Because we had the big scandal. Let's talk about it.
Yes. And my mother and I were just as disappointed as anybody, shocked. So this began in 1956, and the host was Jack Barry. Now, there were two contestants, and they were each put into an isolation booth. And they had headphones so that they knew the question and they gave their answers, but the other contestant, of course, knew nothing. And the questions were from 100 categories, and it was just amazing, amazing what these two contestants knew. So there came a point where a man around 30, a regular-looking guy, his name was Herbert Stempel, he was already at 64,000 and some, and it was possible that the $100,000 mark was in his future. And lo and behold, he was beaten by this quite nappy-looking professor from Columbia University, Charles Van Doren. So Charles Van Doren swept America with how brilliant he was. He was even on the cover of Time magazine. But this is what happened.
The rest of the story.
Okay, Paul, go ahead.
Herbert Stempel had been more or less cast aside, and he became the whistleblower. It was all rigged. And if you read online, as I just have been very interested in doing, if you look him up and see his story and the whole background on this, he was even dressed to look a little bit down and out. Everything was rigged. It turned out that the first episode had been a flop with neither candidate able to answer these hard questions. And so it was decided to rig it from then on after the first episode. So lo and behold, there was never any jail time. There were never any huge fines. One thing I read said that there were no laws about quiz shows.
Right, they didn't break any laws. Yeah.
Yeah, there were no laws about it. But even President Eisenhower had been a fan and was disappointed and enraged. So Herbert Stempel goes down as the whistleblower, but both men lived into their 90s. But I think with a future that was not at all what they wanted, more or less like infamy.
Well, and the movie made was Quiz Show with Ralph Fiennes playing Van Doren, and was it Van Doren?
Charles Van Doren.
And Herbert Stemple was played by John Turturro, and he was the whistleblower. It's an excellent movie, Quiz Show, if you want to check it out. If you go to the library, I think they have it on DVD there.
It rocked America, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. I don't remember it. I was probably a little toddler walking around playing with elevator buttons in my grandmother's building.
And switching gears a little bit to something more for the guys, we had the Friday night fights. That was something to watch every Friday night. Boxing matches sponsored by, of course, Gillette. And you could watch Sugar Ray Robinson, Floyd Patterson, Rocky Marciano, Archie Moore, and many more. And that was always held at the Madison Square Garden every Friday. It was mostly a guy thing, but there were a lot of women who were very emotional watching those fights as well. Then, of course, we had wrestling. We had famous wrestlers like Yukon Eric, Farmer Marlin, Haystacks Calhoun. You know what he weighed? Over 600 pounds. Can you imagine being in a wrestling ring with him?
Sitting on you.
Yes, that's right.
He could even move.
Yeah, that's right. And later on, we had the Crusher and Dick the Bruiser, of course, the Vachon brothers. And we all knew it was fake, but we still watched it. We still enjoyed it. So, yeah, that was mostly for guys. Now we're going to switch gears to our next month topic, and that is going to be, what is it?
Elmwood Plaza.
Elmwood Plaza. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Stores.
Yes, that's right. The magnificent Elmwood Plaza, the shopping mecca of the world in its heyday. That opened up in 1956, by the way. You remember some of the stores, Carol?
Well, who could forget Goldblatt's?
Goldblatt's,
I mean,
right.
We were so excited that Goldblatt's had arrived. We also had many stores there for shoe shopping.
Oh, yes.
For women's clothes.
Yep.
Kresge's.
Yep. Yeah,
Kresge's became Kmart.
Yeah, Kmart, that's right.
Didn't Goldblatt's have a big fire in there or something?
They did, right.
Yeah, I saw pictures of it. I wasn't living here, obviously.
And here's a phrase that Elmo Plaza used, plenty of free parking.
As a dig to the downtown stores.
Plenty of free
parking. And they still have plenty of free parking.
That's right.
I had a little bit of a quiz for you guys. Not a quiz, but I just wanted to wrap it up with some stuff from the 1950s.
Sure.
These were the top TV shows in 1959.
Okay.
Gunsmoke was number one.
Okay.
Wagon Train, Have Gun Will Travel, three Westerns.
All Westerns.
Yeah, you don't see those anymore.
Yeah.
Then the Danny Thomas Show, the Red Skelton Show, Father Knows Best, 77, Sunset Strip.
Oh, that
Strip.
Was a great one.
Yeah.
That
Kookie.
Was
Kookie. Yeah.
Lend me your comb. Yeah. The Price is Right, imagine. Yep. Wanted Dead or Alive and Perry Mason.
Yes.
Wanted Dead or Alive starring Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen, that's right.
That's how he got started.
Yeah, yeah.
And he left that because he wanted to do The Magnificent Seven, and they wouldn't let him out of his contract, and he said, I'm not showing up.
Huh. Oh, really?
Yeah, that was it. TV premieres in 1959, Rawhide, The Bell Telephone Hour, Bonanza premiered in 59, Laramie, The Twilight Zone, one of the most classic shows.
Oh, that was another good one.
Dennis the Menace, and Hawaiian Eye.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
These were finales in 1959, TV shows that ended their run. Confession on ABC, never heard of it before.
No, I didn't either.
Behind Closed Doors on NBC, Your Hit Parade on CBS, The Restless Gun on NBC, Dragnet on NBC. Mm-hmm. Now, it came back in 1968
with
Jack Webb.
Yeah.
But Dragnet ended its run in 59, and the Mickey Mouse Club ended its run in 1959.
Well, this tells us, Don, sometime in the future, we have not even scratched the surface of some of the TV shows, including Westerns. Another list that we saw, all the top 20 of 1965 or something, were all Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to cover Westerns, Twilight Zone.
It's still classic, The Twilight Zone. Sci-Fi Channel runs 24 hours of The Twilight Zone every holiday.
Mm-hmm.
They run them all.
Right.
One year they did them in order, which was really good. And there were a lot of one-hour Twilight Zones, too. They did one season with 1 hour.
Yeah.
But they're all great. There's no losers of the Twilight Zone.
Sometimes when I get into an elevator, to this day, there's a quick thought about, where is this going to go?
Yeah.
Back to the Twilight Zone.
Whereas Jim Gaffigan says, basically, it's a casket on a string. That's what you're getting into.
Yeah.
You guys are just great. I love this stuff.
You. We love having you join us.
Yes. Well, this was great. And taking it back, even though the 50s wasn't really my era, I came in a little later. But I do remember some of the shows that were out of the house and everything. And you guys are great. So Elmwood Plaza, that's going to be in 1 month. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now, when are you, everybody says to me, well, when are they doing the S.C. Johnson shows again? So when are you doing the S.C. Johnson shows again?
Well, that's temporarily on hold because we're spending a lot of energy doing the radio thing
but we'll
get to that.
No, I want the S.C. Johnson shows.
We do have a show in mind that's starting in the works.
In August.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And it's going to be held in a smaller venue, but at the Atonement, the former Atonement Church.
Okay.
And it'll be associated with Preservation Racine, but totally for the public and free.
Okay.
So that's August coming up.
Excellent. Thank you, guys.
Sure. Thank you, Doug.
Jim Messier, Carol Gianforte. Don't forget Carol's book, which is called?
My Heart Leads Me Home.
Great book. Go demand it at your local bookstore. Demand it on Amazon. Demand it. All right, guys. Thanks a lot. 8 o'clock on the noggin. Let's do it.
Local news and timeless hits. WRJN. Receive Kenosha.